Now we're back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN. We're chatting today with Dr. Raylene Wuda, Assistant Professor Veterinary Oncology at Kansas State University's College of Veterinary Medicine and Veterinary Health Center. And we're chatting about everything that's changed here over the last month or so. I guess it's been about a month now since everything shifted to online learning. And, you know, a lot of folks have pets, and, you know, in the social distancing guidelines that we're all following, there is a question of, well, what about my pet's risk for COVID-19? And because from what I understand, it can be transferred from human to animal, but not the other way around. Is that what you understand?
Well, it's a tricky question. And, you know, we have to be really careful because it's very clear that we don't fully understand everything about this virus at this point in time. And we have to realize that with the information we do have, it seems that it came from animals to begin with. The initial transfer is strongly speculated to have come from bats, perhaps with an intermediate host, another wild animal. There's been a lot of talk about animal trafficking and how that might have played a role in it, but it's not fully understood at this point in time. And then the question is, well, then, you know, can we get it from other animals? Can we infect our own pets, and can they then transmit it? And there's been a lot of debate about that. It does seem that the transfer to people's pets is relatively rare. There are a couple of reports from overseas. There were two dogs in Hong Kong that belonged to separate families that tested positive, so were infected with the coronavirus, but were asymptomatic. So they were not showing any clinical signs reflecting the actual disease of COVID-19. They tested positive repeatedly and then eventually tested negative and were sent back home with their families. One of those dogs subsequently passed away, and whilst I'm not privy, obviously, to all the scientific details of that case, it does seem that that dog had a lot of other comorbidities. You know, we keep talking about that with people as well. So this was a very elderly dog with other health issues, which people closer to the case have said were more likely to be the cause of death than the actual coronavirus infection. There was also a cat out of Belgium that reportedly tested positive, but the collection of those test samples was not ideal. So how that case fits into the overall scheme of things is a little questionable. And then, of course, more recently, there's the case of Nadia, the Malayan tiger at the Bronx Zoo, that has tested positive. And I think we've probably all seen that on the news recently. That's a really interesting case because it's a little different. The other cases in domestic pets seemed to be asymptomatic. Those patients were not, those cases were not sick. Whereas Nadia reportedly had respiratory signs, such as a cough, and so did several other tigers that were housed together. However, the only one they tested was Nadia. It's very difficult to test tigers for diseases because they have to be anesthetized. And so they only take that undertaking if it's really required. So they just tested the one tiger. It does seem that she likely contracted it from her keeper, who was unwell and then subsequently tested positive for the coronavirus. But that does imply that perhaps the keeper transmitted it to all the tigers, if it is true that the other tigers also are infected, or perhaps Nadia transmitted it to the other tigers, and that is unknown. We do not know whether animals such as tigers can transmit it to each other or whether it came from human transmission. What seems certain is that the tiger did not give it to the keeper. It certainly seems that it was the opposite way around. And so that applies to our pets, you know. It seems that infections in our household pets that live with us are relatively rare. And that is supported by some very preliminary research out of labs across the world that are working on this problem. There's a very recently published online preliminary paper that suggests that dogs, pigs, chickens, ducks, the virus that we're talking about here specifically replicates really poorly in them. And so that's really encouraging with respect to, you know, our pet dogs that live with us. Cats perhaps might be a little bit more concerning. There is some research that suggests that they might be able to transmit it to one another, but it's really preliminary, so we do not know that, and there's no evidence that they can transmit it back to people. So when we're talking about our pets under these circumstances, the way we should be, I think, thinking about them is members of our family. You know, if we're in isolation because we're somewhat concerned that we may have come into contact with this virus, or if we're truly quarantining or have a, a positive test and we're staying distant from our family members because we want to protect them and make sure they stay healthy, we should think about our pets in just the same way. We want our pets to stay healthy, and so we should maintain social distancing from them as well if we're concerned that we have exposure to the virus or are actually infected. And so under those circumstances, you know, I mean, I have three cats at home, and so if, for example, someone in our household was to become infected, we have a plan where they would sleep in a separate room and use a separate bathroom and try not to go through the main living areas quite so much. And our plan also includes keeping the cats out of, you know, that sleeping area and keeping them away from the other bathroom and making sure they stay in the main living area where there is less contact with perhaps the infected person, because we want our three kitties to stay as healthy as possible.
Well, that being said, any of the local cases that have, of the human coronavirus cases that we've had, I'm sure some of them had some pets. Have you had any animals that have had to come through because of potential exposure?
No, not that I'm aware of. There are protocols that have been put together by the American Veterinary Medical Association for testing under those circumstances, but just like testing for people, they're very strict guidelines. So as far as I'm aware, our hospital has not had to deal with that situation as yet. And I think we're very lucky here in Riley County. You know, numbers are still, you know, comparatively low compared to other parts of the country. And so we're very fortunate in that.
All right. Well, as soon as all this COVID-19 stuff blows over, hopefully sooner than later, how will you guys get back to doing kind of what you're doing out there, especially with the clinical trials?
Right. Yeah, so my job is really different at the moment to what it typically looks like because we are still seeing cancer patients on a daily basis. We are still keeping on treating our chemotherapy patients, but we're trying to batch those onto just a few days a week so that we can conserve the gowns and masks that are required for that procedure. So presumably when all of this becomes a little bit more under control, we'll go back to being slightly busier like we used to be. In terms of caseload and patients, and we'll be seeing our clients then in person again. We're doing quite a lot of consultations at the moment over the telephone without necessarily seeing the patient, so that comes with its unique challenges too. So we'll go back to seeing in-house patients. And our clinical trials program is pretty much on hold at the moment. We had a couple of clinical trials that we were about to get underway when all this happened. And so once it all hopefully settles down a little bit, we will be getting those clinical trials underway, which will be really exciting. A couple of those are looking at sort of previously registered and older chemotherapeutic agents in newer roles and in combination with other agents where we think they're going to have synergistic activity. The other thing that we were looking at is recommencing our apheresis program here, which is where we were basically doing dialysis on some of our cancer patients. But instead of looking at kidney values and things like that, what we were doing is taking out some of their white blood cells called a T cell and working with an industry partner up in Kansas City that has a method of expanding those T cells and making them sort of recognize the cancer cells, and then, you know, we would reinfuse those immune cells back into the cancer patient to hopefully target any leftover cancer cells that are still there, you know, after a surgery or a chemotherapy treatment. So we're going to be looking at starting that back up again, and the preliminary results of some of those studies were really encouraging, so we're excited about that. So yeah, so there's lots that will be happening once the social distancing requirements are eased off a little bit.
All right. Well, and again, summer course is going to be all done online here as that's campus-wide here at K-State. If people have any questions about, you know, anything with the hospital or maybe just taking classes there, how can they get a hold of you?
So the veterinary hospital is certainly still open, and so is the college, and our administration and staff for the college and the hospital. The phone lines are all still just the same as they ever used to be, and they're still being answered. Some of them are being answered remotely, but we all have access to the different computer systems and all that are required to be able to help students with their enrollment, help them with their classes, help them gain access to, you know, the K-State Zoom programs, et cetera, that allow them to, you know, log in and see lectures and seminars and take place in the remote teaching opportunities that are available. So all the previous emails and phone lines and all that kind of thing for the college are still open, and for the hospital. So they can call anytime. The hospital remains open 24/7 for any cases that need it.
Okay. Dr. Raylene Wooda, Assistant Professor of Veterinary Oncology, our guest here this morning from the K-State College of Veterinary Medicine and Veterinary Health Center. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully things get back to normal soon.
Thanks, Brandon. It's been a pleasure.
All right. We always appreciate talking to you. And stay tuned. We will continue our conversations here on In Focus, talking Wamego Strong up next.